The hammer.
Okay, we'll call to order the December 5th meeting of the Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. First item on the agenda is the swearing in of our new member, Mr. Robert Young.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me, please.
Repeat after me, please.
I, Robert Young, swear that I will support and maintain the Constitution and laws of the United States.
Thank you. I swear to uphold the
Constitution and laws of the United States and the Constitution and laws of the State of North Carolina, not inconsistent therewith. And that I will faithfully discharge my duties as a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
I faithfully discharge my duties as a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
For the town of Curie Beach.
For the town of Curie Beach.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Yay! Good. That was a tough one. They ought to give you a script to read on that one.
Yeah, let's sit back here and walk.
That's only stage one. Now you still have to sit.
Yeah. The rule is you've got to throw the Christmas party. Isn't that it?
Last one on the board.
Yeah, last one on the board, 5-3.
Last one on the board.
I like that.
That's after the meeting.
Maybe during.
That's what some of these meetings go.
Move for adjournment.
I'm going to motion to adjourn.
All right, excellent. We have five members now. The next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Mr. Young, would you like to make the first motion?
I make a motion that we address the approval of the agenda.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is approval of the meeting minutes. We've got two. Let's do them separately. We have the closed session, November 7th of... closed session. I think everybody's had a chance to look at that. Is there a motion to approve the closed session? Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Then we have the regular meeting, November 7th. Let's just take a minute and look at that if anybody wants to change it. It's a little bit longer. Is there a motion to approve the regular meeting minutes from November 7th?
So move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, next item is public comments. And we have a crowd here tonight. So hearing no public comments, we're on to old business. The first is an update, which is scheduling the public hearing for December 18th. I did present to the council the two items that we pushed forward. One is the monument sign definition, and the other was the permitted use for religious institutions. We had a bit of a discussion, but overall, I think the council was very supportive of both of them and set that for a public hearing on December 18th. I don't know how many people will show up for that. I plan on being there as far as I know right now. And then I believe the council will vote after that during the regular meeting. Is there any discussion or anything about that item at all? Okay, excellent. The big one is number B, item 6B right there, Downtown Mixed Use Overlay District. It was the motion and the recommendation of the P&Z last time to get direction before we sally forth on such an endeavor. We had a good discussion. We presented it. Our attorney was there and made a significant contribution in describing, I think, the importance of moving ahead on this quickly. And so after kind of an interesting discussion, there appeared to be a change of heart, I think it was. And it was unanimously approved 5-0 that the P&Z start looking at this particular issue. The motion had within it that we make sure that we do talk to the citizens and we do talk to the business members within the community and within the downtown district and so forth. So the recommendation is that we move forward. And so what I told them is that what we would do is tonight is start to think about how we want to do this, if we want to kind of structure, start setting up kind of meetings or public hearings or just have a general discussion about this right now or kind of assign homework for everybody to think about this or however we want to do it. So maybe we just open it up for discussion right now. But we do have a charge now to push ahead and look at an overlay district to preserve. I'm not sure exactly what the wording was, but it is, I believe, preserve the village atmosphere for the downtown district.
I'd like to first start off by saying I think we ought to look at more than just the B1, B2 district. There are there's several long-time businesses that are outside of the B1 district that are in the thing, and I think we ought to include those in any overlay that we do.
Okay. Yeah, and I believe that the direction of the town council was not specifically for the B1. I think they talked about the downtown community and preserving the village atmosphere of the downtown community. And so that was one of the discussions that came up, and so we talked about that's one of the things that we would look at. And pointed out that an overlay district is not limited to a particular zoning district. It can overlay on top of it, be larger or smaller.
The other thing, in looking at the Laguna, well, looking at all of the ones that were presented, all of them had a top 5, top 10 thing to look at was pedestrian and bike traffic, mm-hmm. and how to get people to move around these areas. And I think that's, when you go down to K and Port Fisher Boulevard, I mean, there's no crosswalks and things like that. So I think that's something we got to find out how much pain the town wants to go through in order to. The bike path ends right at an avenue. I mean, do we look at trying to do an alternative bike path as part of this overlay, or do we try to find a way to put it through town? So there, that's when you look to me, when you read those overlay districts that we've looked at, that's a large part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, making it pedestrian friendly, they all talk about how to ensure, and I don't know what level we should do to go to that, or do we not do it at all?
If I remember right, John, do you remember it was about 5 years ago there was a report done by, was it Chapel Hill or NC State, that looked at the downtown, Curie Beach downtown, and had some architectural, I mean, they put together some renderings of what they felt it would look like. I think it was maybe part of a architecture class or something like that at Chapel Hill.
I'm not familiar with that. There's been several B1 studies that have been paid for through the town for mm-hmm. years. Done by local architects.
I'm pretty sure this was done by Chapel Hill, a group from Chapel Hill or NC State. And I remember that, you know, typical of these sort of things, they get kind of shelved and not looked at. But I remember they had renderings and drawings of what they saw the downtown, what it should look like, you know, with that kind of village feel and stuff like that. Do you remember that at all? It might. I know I was part of the P&Z, so it might have been my very first year on it or something. So that might have been 6 years ago or something like that.
Talking about what he said, you know, there was some stuff done with getting Duke Power to move the power poles to make the intersection there more pedestrian friendly.
Right.
But they were only $250,000,
$300,000
to do that.
Well, that's the pain. Like, yeah.
We can't do that.
Right, that's the pain that.
Yeah.
Well, it's also some areas when you get around B1 district, extension of side, you got sidewalks and you don't have sidewalks.
Yeah.
And some of the side streets, you want to make it easier for pedestrians to get from 4th, 5th, all the way to Atlantic Avenue. You know, put, and do we need more crosswalks in that area? But that's a lot of money, and I don't know if we should say that's not, you know, we can only provide limited improvements in the area of pedestrian and cycling.
I personally think an important part of it is architectural type of issues. I mean, in terms of architectural design, I, you know, again, I'm a big fan of we're not the first person, the first city that has looked at this issue. It's been resolved in a variety of different type of communities. Again, we've looked at some of them. I think the starting point is for us to do homework, and you know, whether we want to do it individually or, you know, another commission a study to try to kind of help us with this. You know, I could talk. You know, we got a new semester starting at the university. I'd almost guarantee that I could get students from the university to help us with this. You know, we don't have an architectural school, but you know, we do have a public administration school over there and stuff like that. So I mean, just in terms of helping us, you know, I like to have some models and templates in front of us that, you know, would kind of move us in the right direction, at least in a model. And then we also have to decide the process, you know, of public hearings and, you know, when we want to have public hearings and who we want to talk to and so forth. Jimmy? Yeah?
Chairman, thank you. I did want to make a couple of points. One, if we could, I agree, template studies, doing the homework is important. I don't know what the status is, but if staff could compile those former B1 studies, that might be a useful part.
It's a good starting point, yeah.
But Commissioner Richardson, I want to emphasize that we're not contemplating an improvement project. We're contemplating its zoning regulations.
Okay, that doesn't do
it. Doesn't have anything to do. Improvements might be made a part of a land use approval under a special use permit. You may say, for example, somebody comes in and they've got a good project, but they need that sidewalk extended. Well, that's where you would. And okay. You have the developer do that. So in terms of power line relocations, crosswalks, none of that's relevant at this stage. You're drafting zoning regulations for what you want that area to look like, what uses go in there, and how those uses will be regulated.
That's okay. That's nice. That's nice. It narrows it down to what we're looking at.
You've worked with an overlay, a downtown overlay, before. What the ones I've worked with are Laguna Beach type of things. They're pretty complicated and pretty detailed and so forth. You know, I've worked with La Jolla in the San Diego area. I've done worked with about three or four, but you know, most of those are kind of bigger and more detailed than I think what we're talking about. But are you familiar with possibly some ones that you work with that might be a good starting point also to kind of think about?
Belleville has two downtown overlay districts. One is comprehensive, like you've described, for a redevelopment project in the central business district. But the last one, or the one that we will have a TRC on next week, involves the Riverwalk Park across from Belleville Elementary School. I'm going to put a plug in. If nobody's ever been to that park, it's very, very nice. It's Kama and some sort of park and recs grant. I can't think of the name of it right now. But we acquired those parcels from the county, put in some nice boardwalks, fishing pier observation dates, old oaks, lovely place. But they have two projected commercial pads in there. And they want to be very careful about who comes in. They're contemplating an upper tier restaurant. I forget the other one, maybe an outdoor recreational store. And we're going to look at for a couple of months they've worked on an overlay district set of regs. They're only 3 pages long. And they basically are concerned with height, exterior design elements, siding, siting, relative to the park, the nature trails, and the parking lot, and essentially set up a special use permit process so you can control what comes in there. Very, very simple. Very, very simple. The rough draft, I supplied the rough draft. I searched templates on Google until I found one I liked, copy and pasted it and revised it. That template was done in 3 hours. And it doesn't have any of that kind of comprehensive detail, but it is designed to preserve the maritime forest aesthetics of that park, the natural aspects, and not take away from that at all. At the same time, control. For example, a nice steakhouse versus McDonald's, something like that. So yeah, I've got a very simple template that I'll be glad to.
Yeah, you know, I think that'd be great. So I think trying to find some of the prior B1 studies that have been done in the last 5 or 10 years. And I know there's been at least one, if not two, since I've been kind of involved in the community. And I remember one of them did have the drawings of what at least this group thought the downtown should look like. You know, having your template, I'll do some more research and see if I can find more simpler versions. You know, I sent the Laguna Beach around as kind of the more extreme version of what can be done. But see if I can find some other ones that have, you know, that would be a shorter 3 to 5 page type of overlay. One of the things I'm concerned about is not only the architectural design elements, but I think the type of, you know, again, I think of a very, very lovely community, which is San Luis Obispo in California. And I still remember what they did is they prohibited drive-through. They didn't want drive-through restaurants. You could have a McDonald's, it just couldn't be a drive-through. So they didn't restrict McDonald's. But you couldn't have the golden huge 20-foot golden arches, and you couldn't have a drive-through. And San Luis Obispo is a beautiful place. I mean, it's over the last 30 or 40 years, it's a gorgeous place. Yes?
If I could make two more points. Plan consistency, Coates Cannons out of the School of Government just published its third consistency statement article in the past 2 or 3 years. And that's mainly the result of court actions invalidating municipal actions because of literally just procedural irregularities with the consistency statement. But it provided a very useful history of how important consistency with a comprehensive plan is. So in addition to the B1 studies, I'm asking John, does the FLUP address the B1 district? Is it carved out and provide some text on that, on all the
districts? The land use plan? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think we need to look at that too, because literally, first of all, consistency is one of the consistency with the neighborhood is one of the required elements for a special use permit. Consistency of a comprehensive plan is also a statutory requirement. It's not binding on council, but council needs to address it, and you all need to address it. That's what we do with our consistency statements. So in addition to the B1 studies, it'd be useful to look at the circulate the future land use plan provisions that are pertinent to that area. And finally, keep in mind that exterior design elements town's prohibited from requiring those for one or two family dwellings. Beyond that, you're not prohibited. So you always need to keep that in mind. If you can't allow for one or two family dwelling units and slap some design elements on those.
Can you get the, because I know that was passed that just this last year. And within the B1, if we do allow, and again, we need to talk to it, because right now, residential, one and two unit residential is allowed in the B1. So we were going to have to be careful in the way that we write it, that if that continues to be allowed, and that would...
That's not correct. I'm sorry.
Isn't it? Okay.
Yes, sir. You're allowed to build a single-family dwelling if there is an existing single-family dwelling there.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, that's it.
All right.
Okay.
Are there any existing single or double-family dwellings?
I think there's 11 left.
Okay. So that for those, if they wanted to replace it with another single family dwelling, we couldn't have an architectural thing. But if they wanted to replace it with a commercial building or something like that, then we could.
Yes.
So we got to be careful about that.
Would you like me to circulate that statute?
Yes, yes, please. So, all right. So anyway, we've talked about trying to get prior B1 studies, the land use plan, the template that you're familiar with, the ordinance regarding the restriction of architectural requirements for residential housing. And then if anybody wants to get on the, you know, start Googling and try to find, you know, just on their own, anything that you want to bring in, maybe for our next meeting to look at or circulate prior to that, I think that'd be great.
When do we actually want to do the footprint of the overlay?
Well, I think that's what we need to, you know, in terms of the process. If we meet in January with this information, I mean, think about the timeline. If we meet in January with that information, then I think it'd be appropriate to kind of schedule maybe a schedule for, I mean, we could talk about that in January, and then maybe what we want to do is schedule hearings, you know, with the, or some mechanism to converse with the community, with the downtown community, the business owners, you know, that sort of thing. But I think it's important that, at least from the council's perspective, that we set up kind of a formal process by which we're going to go through this and make sure that we're incorporating the people that council's concerned that we do talk to.
Was the council, was there such a process with Belleville that they actually set out an agenda for the overlay?
Well, that's a good question. The I call it Riverwalk Overlay District. The Riverwalk project was so uncomprehensive that we didn't have to worry about that. And there's a vision for the park, and that was not an issue. However, and I'm not suggesting this, Belleville has waterfront property, which is probably the only waterfront, undeveloped waterfront property between here and Myrtle, past Myrtle Beach. It's pristine. Yeah. Well, it's not pristine. It's actually a blighted downtown district, because when they put the bridge, 74-76, if you go across that bridge, look to your right, you'll see the BP, you'll see Circle K, and you'll see little buildings scattered, and it just looks like a worn-out area. That's the old downtown.
Down there, yeah.
So they knew they wanted to develop that, so they did what was called a charrette, and they hired a group called the Lawrence Group. And the Lawrence Group came in. It cost a lot of money. It was either $80,000 or $100,000. But what they did was they had a series of workshops. What I remember was they'd have different tables set up for different areas, like what kind of development, what kind of traffic flow, pedestrian amenities, environmental, ecological, and the public. It was like an all-day event. The public would come in and kind of daydream out loud and give their recommendations. And then the Lawrence Group took all that, compiled it, and produced a real slick, you know, 2020 plan of what the redevelopment should look like. Well, what's interesting about that is, you know, I don't think you need that. It certainly was expensive. It was a slick dog and pony show, but it did have some very useful elements, because the hallmark, the backbone, the hallmarks, the crux of the matter, the gist of that charrette report went on to form the framework and a lot of the detail inside the comprehensive overlay district that we've got for the downtown area. So public input is critical, whether you do it by a public hearing where who knows who will show up and what they will say, or whether you do it as a workshop. Maybe you do that first, get some ideas, have a workshop with council where the public can attend. You know, the sky's the limit. And I'm sure the chairman's got a lot of experience with inputting for future comprehensive plans or overlay districts.
Anything we can do to get public feedback, I'm just encouraged on this.
Yeah, that's critical for this project.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of well-publicized meetings, and I won't be surprised if there'll be people with this.
And that's what council, that was their sort of condition for going forward.
You know, I never thought about doing it as you suggested. Just have a day long open house, and you could probably have members of the commission here that people would come in. They talk. You could write a whole bunch of stuff down.
That's what they did. They wrote it on a board.
Have whiteboards around and stuff like that.
And that group sort of synthesized everything, and it ended up in the report. it ended up guiding the, you know, the overlay district and the redevelopment project. Notwithstanding the fact that that 20-year development agreement is the subject of a lawsuit, but that's a different story.
I mean, that's an interesting idea. I remember when I was looking at overlay districts like a month or two ago, I found one that in the document described the process. I'll see if I can find that. They described the process that they went through to get there, because I wanted to make sure that that was at the front end of that overlay district, just in case there were any issues. And but I can see if I can find that, because I remember it had public hearing, and then there was another meeting, and there was another public hearing, and there was a whole process. It took about 6 months.
Chairman, what was the process for the mixed use overlay that you've got? I don't know if that's the right name. K Avenue or something. You've got an overlay district.
Right, right. If I remember right, we did. It wasn't very controversial first. Okay, so, and it was driven by the previous mayor. Okay, actually two mayors, you know, prior.
Also driven by the land use plan.
Yes, right. That's right. By the land, because but that was kind of built in there because of the mayor too, if I remember right, the land use plan. So it was always in the land use plan that there would be an overlay district, a mixed use overlay district. I don't think it was defined as an overlay, but it was defined as a mixed use down K Avenue.
Mixed use overlay district.
Was it okay? And so we were reminded, I guess, that we needed to do that because it was in the land use plan, so we did it. I think we had a public, I'm pretty sure we had a public hearing.
We did.
You know, on that. But I don't remember it being very well attended or controversial at all. And so we just kind of wrote it up, and I think it's a 2-page overlay or something like that.
Very simple, very brief.
Yeah. So, So anyway, I mean, if that's okay, let's talk. Are we going to have the January? Because I remember that came up too, the January 2nd, and that some people suggested maybe doing it January 9th.
Either way.
Okay. So assuming that when we get to that agenda item next meeting, we make it to January 9th.
Is the 13th, which is a Sunday in January, too early to start getting public input?
No.
The reason I say that is there's a Curie Beach Homeowners Association group that represents the 9 homeowners association in this town, and they happen to be meeting on Sunday the 13th at Ocean Dunes at 6:00 at night. And part of our there's a 2-hour meeting, and we've only got about an hour of it filled. If we're prepared to at least talk about that information, we could address that to at least representatives from many of the homeowners associations that show up that day.
Okay.
The one concern I have.
Sorry.
Can I get an invite to that?
You got one. Anytime.
The one concern I have about that is nobody, I mean, all the HOAs have little contact with the overlay district. And after going through what we went through with parking,
I don't know if it'll make you feel any better, the first part of the meeting is the mayor talking to them about parking.
That's
going to make them real happy.
Yeah.
But the other side of that coin is, if you're taking it from the viewpoint that you're trying to preserve the downtown, I don't think you can have a lot of fight from these HOAs, and they might be able to give you some support and or ideas.
Actually, one woman said do away with it at the parking meeting from an HOA.
What is
that's
is,
one. But.
Does this meeting going to have more than just the leaders of the HOA? Is it open?
There's only 2 or 3 people coming from each HOA leadership.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. What are the rules about us going as commissioners?
You can do whatever you want as long as it's not a quorum.
Well, that's why I'm asking. So as long as we don't have 3 or more commissioners go to these meetings.
So a 0.2 to attend.
Now, when you say commissioner, commissioners,
the planning commission,
council members, whatever the public body is, you don't want a majority.
Okay.
Well, you would be there as...
I'm one.
Yeah, but you'd serve 2 purposes then, as a commissioner and a HOA?
I'm a member of the HOA. I represent the Washington's HOA.
And it's not as simple as a majority. Majority, if you all could be president, talk about the NFL, that doesn't violate open meetings law, but if you are doing business, like talking to that HOA about the future overlay district, Yeah, that would be a violation.
Okay.
Well, what if you're just soliciting information from them, what they'd like to see, rather than talk?
Well, I think that's a fine line and a gray line, that it's three of you conducting business on behalf of the town, i.e. soliciting feedback. Okay. If you want to get technical about it, I think that's public business.
What I would suggest is that if we change the meeting to January 9th, that is still before this meeting.
Correct.
Okay, so I think, you know, based upon what we talked about, we could have a good discussion after we think about this, you know, get the land use plan, get the prior studies that have been done, you know, we all do a little bit of homework, we get the template that you've talked about, and then we have a good discussion on January 9th, let's say, about thinking about this as well as the process. And if it makes sense then that we assign two members of the commission to go to that meeting
now
on the 9th, then
legally,
that makes sense.
Can I not be a member of the commission and just be an HOA representative? And does that count then?
You can draw as fine a line as you want. It's your actions that dictate the result. If you've got two other commissioners there and you start doing something on behalf of the town in addition to on behalf of the HOA, then yeah, technically you've got a technical problem. You can't pick and choose your role, it's what your actions are.
Okay. So with that in mind, is there any, I don't think we need to take any action. We've had a discussion about 6B. Do we need any action at all? Because I think, I mean, we'll come to when we want the next meeting in a second.
Right.
But I don't think we need to have any action.
Okay. Can we talk about, because I always like targets, at least when we have our next meeting, if we do this, that we will attempt to at least do A, B, or C to get ready. Like we'll either have a process, we're going to set public meetings, we're going to give the council a projected overlay footprint, something that would come out of the 9th, so we get to get going. So we.
I think having the process laid out. I think on the 9th, what we can do is we can identify on this date we're going to have a public hearing. On this date we're going to, you know. But what I'd like to do is see what other people have done to do this process.
No, I know. Do the homework.
Right. Do the homework.
But our goal at the next meeting is to
have a firm process.
Have a firm process
and a timeline with it.
And a timeline. Yes.
And a timeline. Okay.
Yeah.
I have one question just for my education. Attached to the agenda are these two things, or is that a proposal?
That's the existing.
That's the existing
B1. That's it, the B1. That's what we were talking about, in that the B1, there are businesses outside of the B1 district. There's residential business district and... Oh, I can't think of it. Well, anyway, and do we want the footprint to cover all our existing...
And that's a question we can start addressing once we do our homework.
Right, on the 9th, right.
Got it, thank you.
Okay, unless there's any further discussion, we'll go to new business. Actually, there's one other old business I should have mentioned. You had talked about gas tanks last time.
Propane tanks.
Yeah. Did you want to...
Well,
continue that discussion, or
my concern is still the town. We have no proposal to end up with possible bomb situation. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But if you took a look at what happened at our 1800 building with the storm washout, at one point we had a 100-pound tank and a 300 or 400-pound tank of propane hanging down by their attachments. The fire department came, lowered it down to what was then the ground. And then after some more washout and some more water, they started end up being bobbing for dollars in an area that was locked in by nails coming through wood. And it became an issue for us. The fire department came again. We got out the smaller tank, and then John was afraid and probably stopped us from wrecking the building by making us strap it to the building rather than try and hoist it out again, because he was worried about the structure, and that's probably the right thing to be doing it. So thank you, John. We didn't want to rebuild the thing.
I'm not sure, you know, looking at the minutes, I'm not sure if there's anything that's in the purview of the P&Z related to this, or, because you had talked to the town council, I believe you talked to the town council about this.
I've talked to them at some point about it, but I've talked to the fire department about it.
At one point we were going to have people come.
Kennedy was going to come and talk to us, talk and then we canceled the meeting.
And then I thought we were actually going to look at, is there anything that we can do after finding out some more facts to tighten up that area so that, these tanks will be put in places that they wouldn't wash away.
Does the P&Z have any authority over what we're talking about here, John?
It requires a replacement for it, yes, sir. I mean, typically speaking, propane units are located as close to the building that they service as possible. There's other regulations that I look at on an individual basis that have to do mainly with floodplain. In this particular case, I believe those propane tanks were, there have been propane tanks in that location since the buildings were built. So that kind of.
And they're scattered. There's probably about another 3 or 4 of them scattered between other buildings in the association's area, because we have 25 buildings.
I felt like it should be something that the HOA addresses on their own, because it's really a particular issue to them. That's just my personal opinion.
How about if we, would you be okay if we put that on the agenda item for our January meeting?
Yeah, I'll bring pictures and whatever else.
I mean, you brought pictures before for us to look at. I remember
the rusted one.
So you have new pictures now, okay.
Hanging and whatever else, I haven't brought those.
All right, and then we can talk about whether it really is something that P&Z needs to address, because I did notice that you didn't mention that last time, so I wanted to follow up.
John, is there any other areas where propane tanks that you've seen are an issue throughout the town?
Well, no, because no other buildings get undermined.
Yeah, so they're not in the flood zone. So.
Well, they're in the flood zone, and it's possible, but floodplain requirements require them to be tied down and anchored so they don't flood away.
Yeah, and primarily. Right now the requirement, and it's a county issue, it's not even a town issue because it's mechanical. So what you're looking at is they're required to have a slab that is, that's not going to wash away initially, like cement or whatever else, and then they're supposed to have a strap through it to nail it to keep it in place. Yeah. However, when everything underneath the slab disappears,
it
doesn't do a whole lot of good.
I wrote it down and saw it. Yeah.
I have a question. What I have to assume for the sake of discussion that P&Z wanted to draft regulations. What in the world could you draft other than what's already required? That an act of God nullified. What else could you do?
The basic law of any law, you can always tighten, you can't loosen. That's a basic
rule. If you've already got a slab that's not supposed to be washed away and tied down to the slab, what else could you do?
You can require them to be someplace where they're not.
Like an AC elevated?
It's an option. But someplace where they can't be washed out and hanging and or bumping into something and exploding.
No, I understand the danger. Certainly.
I'm not going to be real happy with a lot of homeowners when I make this happen or try to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, that's one reason I brought it up, that it's kind of particular to your situation down there, because if you did require them to have it somewhere else and you're encroaching upon common area,
All those areas are common area.
They are, okay. So, and then you're looking at placing them in other areas, which would mean on the other side of the parking lots, which would mean that all of those propane lines would have to be placed on the ground around up to those units. I don't know how we'd be able to regulate that as a town. That's part of the reason I was saying it seemed like it would be an HOA issue more than ours.
Problem with the HOA is I would tell you that probably a third of the board owns them.
Gotcha.
Well, that's a circumstance to take into consideration.
All right, so let's go ahead and make sure that that's on the agenda for our January meeting. New business, the mayor has formed a naming committee to look into possible dedication for the new fire station. And again, I asked about that, whether it's naming, I mentioned the university, we sell brooms, tables, chairs, and everything to make money. And this is not to make money. It is actually an honor. If we want to sell something, we can sell benches and names on benches and things like that. Anyway, he's requesting input from the citizen committees, including the P&Z, for recommendations. I'm not sure exactly what he's looking for from us.
Well, I think he was just, looking for perhaps a citizen
to be honored.
To be honored, time served, dedication to volunteering.
So he's actually looking for us to nominate?
Well, just looking for perhaps names or...
If the board chooses to do the same.
Or...
Yeah.
Because there's already a committee, so he's not asking for us to be representative on the committee.
Well, he's looking for names to the committee.
Okay, but
you're
not...
on the committee, right?
No one's informed me yet.
Oh, okay.
Nobody's named me yet to the naming committee.
That doesn't mean anything.
But, the Heckler family, Chief Cooper.
I'll be glad to serve if he wants me to serve.
Perhaps Jim Dugan.
Okay.
People that...
You want people that are still alive.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Okay, yes. Got no other folks on over here.
Types of buildings
and dedication. You want to name something after me?
I'm okay with that too. That would be my recommendation. My service has done nothing. But, just the people like that have given a lifetime to Curry Beach.
Don't look like a Charlie Allen.
Yeah. Now that's a tough one to have pick one person for such an important thing as
a you can pick several. They're going to narrow it down.
They're talking about naming a fire station, so it'd be the something fire station, I assume. The Charlie Allo fire station. So, it sounds weird to me. Well, that's what he's talking about. But he's talking about kind of he also mentioned a wall of rogues or something like that, which kind of makes...
Or a classroom.
Heroes, maybe.
Fire station.
Yeah.
Rogues on there.
Rogues.
Something with the police department.
If he's looking for feedback, recommendations, my personal recommendation is that you shouldn't name buildings in the city after individuals. I think that's, you can name streets, you can name...
We could have the...
Whatever, but not a full building.
The Jim Dugan bathroom.
In Flushing, New York.
That's off the record.
Be careful. Universities, we'd probably do that too. So, if someone's willing to pay for it. Is there any other feedback for council representative here regarding this? Again, my only feedback is be cautious about naming a whole fire station after one individual.
Well, I don't think that's the intent.
Oh, is it okay? It came across that way.
Bay, unless I'm wrong. Have you heard anything different?
I don't know.
It sounded to me they were talking about the whole station.
Me too.
I
haven't attended these meetings. That's not
I agree with you.
I didn't even know the committee was put together yet. So.
John, you're on it.
You read the meeting was put together.
It was.
You're probably playing replay.
I'm not going to read the book, yeah.
Like to say you dedicate the station, is it, you got to put a plaque?
Something like that.
There's
going to be a classroom up there, so our fire department can take classes actually at the station.
Now, classroom is appropriate. Yeah.
Inside the building.
For example, could be the Harold Hegler classroom or something like that.
So who's on the committee then?
Craig and Dennis are the only two I know about from SLAP.
Dennis Pentecone?
Yeah. And I think Jim Dugan is.
Nikki Keeley is.
I don't know who else. I'm not in that email loop. But...
Okay.
Volunteer?
Nope.
All right. Any other feedback for... Okay. Next meeting, I'll make a motion to meet January 9th. And who mentioned that?
I did.
Yeah, that's right. You did. Okay.
Well, that was before the ball committee met.
Okay. we can't meet January 2nd. That's kind of... bumping into vacation time for people, so the 9th is better for me, probably.
There'll probably still some hangovers, too.
Yeah. All right, so I'll make a motion that our January meeting be January 9th at 7 o'clock. Is there a second to that?
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And we'll let, since you started our motion, you want to do the second?
I'll be the second.
Okay, very good. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Very good. Well, thank you very much.
And we thank the public for their comment.
Yes. You'd be surprised how much we can accomplish if there's nobody here. Sometimes.